It's Celtics coverage on CLNSRadio.com.
Sensational move from Kyrie Irving. Oh, Hayward. Horford lays it up and in.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free 347-215-7771.
Welcome into this edition of this Celtics post-game show. I am your host, Josue Pavone, joined by Matt Chin as the Celtics. Man, I'm not going to lie, man. This one, I almost had a problem trying to stay away from this one because this one was a snooze fest. Man, the Celtics ran all over the Bulls today. I mean, this is just not a great team altogether, especially in comparison to the Celtics. I mean, Kyrie Irving or not, these guys came ready to ball. They certainly showed off their depth, especially in the front court. The Celtics managed to top the Bulls in this one. 105-89, the Celtics bounced back from their loss against the Houston Rockets with the Fury. I mean, with no Kyrie Irving, no telling if he'll be able to play against the Minnesota Timberwolves on Thursday, where the Celtics will wrap up this quick three-game road trip. However, the Celtics put together one heck of a win today, especially in that front court, man. I mean, you talk about the three guys who have certainly been consistent throughout the first half of the season, or at least the first couple of months. I feel like this is what we were accustomed to seeing, and we saw a little bit of that today, or tonight, I should say, and specifically in Jaylen Brown, man. Jaylen Brown was just dancing all over the Chicago Bulls. It's like no one could stay in front of him. He finished with a game-high 21 points, 4 rebounds. I mean, he pretty much only played through three quarters. He was just going from the first half specifically, where he was able to really take advantage of his matchups, take advantage of the mismatches. You saw the same thing with Al Horford, who bounced back with 9 points in the first quarter. The Celtics went on a 15-0 run in that first quarter, which, of course, made a difference when they took a 35-16 lead. The Bulls never led in this one. The Celtics grabbed that double-digit lead and essentially never looked back as they topped the Chicago Bulls. I mean, big shout-out to Jason Tatum as well. 14 points, 5 rebounds. I mean, you saw him doing those crossover dribbles, fadeaway jump shots, driving to the hoop, crossing cats over. I mean, it was just one of those showings where I felt like the Chicago Bulls, that front court just couldn't keep up with those three guys in particular. And the end result was a 105-89 win against the Chicago Bulls. Once again, this is the CLNS Media Celtics post-game show. I'm your host, Josue Pavone. I'm joined by Matt Chin. Matt, I'm just bring you in right now. It's funny, Matt tweeted out before the game ended, like, oh, man, here we go. This is going to be quite a post-game show. But not because, you know, the game, you know, it has nothing to do with what we're seeing right now. It's going to be a great post-game show because we can actually get into other things that aren't related to this game, looking ahead, or if you want to talk about wherever your callers want to take this, you know how to join us. 347-215-7771 is how you join us. Once again, it's 347-215-7771. Matt, before we switch gears a bit, since that's essentially what you wanted to do before we even got on the air, let's talk a little bit about this game. What are your reactions to this one as the Celtics top the Chicago Bulls tonight in the United Center?
Well, I figured we wouldn't be able to get a full hour in with this matchup tonight. I think you hit it right on the head when calling it kind of a snoozer. Mid-third quarter, I was like, oh, man, I got a podcast after this. And with these blowout games, you generally have to wait like an extra half hour before the Blog Talk Radio comes on. But a couple few takeaways.
Yeah,
big
we're way ahead this time.
Yeah, a couple big takeaways that we can get from this game. I think Al Horford, the last 24, 48 hours or so, he's been taking a huge hit from Celtics Twitter, from the media in Boston in general. What is going on with Al Horford, despite how well the Celtics have been playing the last 5 games since the All-Star break? He's really been struggling. It was great to see him come back strong tonight, 6-for-8 from the field, 13 points, 7 boards, 2 assists, a team-high plus 31. You know, you don't want to overreact or anything because we are talking about the Chicago Bulls, who are, you know, more interested in Luka Doncic and DeAndre Ayton at this point than they are in padding their win column. But it was nice to see how Horford be a little bit more assertive, especially with Kyrie Irving out. He had to tote that load in the first quarter there. I also thought the decision to start Shane Larkin was an interesting one that I really liked from Brad Stevens. He talked about in the pregame that Larkin's first came back on a minutes count. He wanted to get him in there to start the game just because it would be easier for him to get into the flow of the game after warming up and getting loose rather than having to sit down to start the game. Larkin, 9 points on 3-of-3 shooting, 4 assists, added 4 rebounds as well. And I actually really like that decision just because the bench has been playing so well since the All-Star break. I wasn't too interested in breaking up the combination of Terry Rozier and Marcus Smart. Didn't want to mess with the rotation too much off the bench. So I thought Larkin played admirably, even though he only got 16 minutes. And then you touched on Jaylen Brown a little bit, who had some foul trouble against the Houston Rockets on Saturday night. It was nice to see him bounce back 9-of-13 tonight for 21 points. He was really taking the ball to the rack at will against the Bulls, making some tough layups from all different kinds of angles. Nice to see that from Jaylen Brown. He's been on the season a little bit inconsistent, finishing at the rim and trying to maneuver his way. So it was nice to see him be aggressive as well. And then big picture wise, it's always good. You need to take care of business against a team like the Bulls. You know, these last 20 games or so, these are the games that you need to bank. You need to bank some rest minutes for the starters. Al Horford only 22 minutes tonight. Jason Tatum only 20. So it's nice to know that you could go into the fourth quarter with the game in hand, kind of relax a little bit. And you want this team to be fresh. I said it, after the Memphis game as well. You want this team to be fresh. So any sort of blowouts that can occur in these last 20 games are a welcome sight for the Celtics, especially when Kyrie Irving's not on the floor.
Yeah, you know what, Matt? I love the idea of seeing Shane Larkin out there. I mean, he's like the 12th guy on this roster, and he always tends to give you a solid production, or maybe not always, because I remember one time I tweeted out the fact that I feel like he more times than not gives you a pretty good showing when he's out there on the floor. And someone told me, like, wait, you know, he's 50-50. You know, you never really know where you're going to get at Shane Larkin. But all right, well, let me preface this. Let's put it this way. When he's put in a spot like this, where we've seen in the past, one of the best examples was early in the season against the Hornets, where we saw Kyrie Irving play about 5 minutes before he was whacked in the face and had to, you know, he was ruled out not only for that game, but the game afterwards, or the games down the road. And you saw Shane Larkin just come up big in those big spots. I think this is a guy who may not have, you know, put in a lot of years in the NBA per se, but he's a pro. I mean, he's a guy who played overseas. He's been in that role. He knows what it's like to be the number one option. I'll never forget him talking about that media day where he felt like that experience from overseas put him in a set of confidence that he was ready to make a return back to the NBA. He was ready to play for a team like the Boston Celtics where he knew that he'd have to fight for minutes. So he's always ready for these moments when his names are called. And I love how Brad Stevens will tend to turn to him when he needs to. I love the fact that, of course, he also talked about what you just said. Before the game, he talked about how he was not trying to shake things up with his bench. This bench has been on a roll lately, averaging north of over 50 to 52 points the last 5 games. And tonight, you know, you just didn't want to see that shakeup. You saw Tice get some minutes in there. We didn't get to see him Saturday night. I think Brad Stevens is trying to see if these two can coexist with each other. I'm talking about Tice and Monroe. Monroe's going to be a guy who's going to – he sort of has a nod right now in terms of who's getting more minutes between the two. And I think he wants to tweak lineups a bit and see if these two guys can coexist on the floor together, along with a guy like Marcus Morris, who had a bit of a cold night tonight, but, of course, didn't really matter much because of the lead and because of the advantage. And then you have someone like Terry Rozier, who just continues to give you consistent production offensively. He finished with 13 points, 7 assists, you know, off the bench. But yeah, you know, if Irving is unable to go Thursday night, which could be a strong possibility, don't be surprised if you see Larkin back out there again. And as a facilitator, as a guy who can give you some defensive stops, he finished with a pair of steals tonight, you know, 9 points, 4 assists. He played only 16 minutes. You know, he's just that kind of guard who can give you plenty of production and effort on both ends of the floor. We saw that tonight.
Yeah, but the thing I love about Shane Larkin is he's just a professional point guard. He knows how to get the offense initiated, and sometimes you just need that.
Great
you
way
need
to put
someone,
it.
Yep. You need someone who can be calm, who can be resolute, and just get the offense going and not have the first initial pass come with 12, 15 seconds on the shot clock. He really gets the offense started, and he did a nice job tonight. He also doesn't take a lot of bad shots, 3-for-3, all wide open three-pointers tonight, knock them down. So that's what I really like about Larkin, and to have that veteran presence. I know he's been out of the NBA the last couple of years, but he's such a good pick-and-roll point guard, and he makes really good decisions. look, is he the most athletic guy? Is he going to wow you with his physique? Absolutely not. I mean, I think that's part of the reason why he fell out of favor with the league. But he's smart. He's got a good brain between his ears. And that's what you really want. And I'm glad they didn't break up the bench, because they've been on a roll. And given where they were in mid-February leading up to the All-Star break, I don't think you want to mess with something that's working this well. You touched a little bit on Monroe and Tice. Another good offensive game for Monroe, 10 points, 9 rebounds, a minus 9, which is tough. Obviously, you know, Monroe's never going to be out there for his defensive prowess. But the nice thing about being able to pair him with Daniel Tice is Tice can slide over to that power forward position. We've seen him in the past be able to knock down some corner jumpers, catch and shoot shots. So he could space the floor a little bit when you have a big bruiser like Monroe. So it was nice to see Brad Stevens start to experiment a little bit with the lineups. I thought they played more out of the post. Scal talked about that on the podcast tonight. And, you know, that's what you got to do in these last 20 games. It's looking like you're falling into the two seed. There's no way there's very little way you're going to fall back to the three seed unless something absolutely amazing happens with the Cavs and the Celtics fall apart. You know, you could be gunning for the one seed, but now's the time to really figure out what are your strengths, what are the rotations, who plays well with who, which players pair well with each other schematically. And I think, you know, being on that 16-game winning streak early in the season, that affords the Celtics, you know, some experimental time, which they're going to take advantage of the last 15, 17 games of the season or whatever it may be.
Yeah, 1,000% agree with you, Matt, on that one, because I think I can't help but think about that those two games between the Celtics and the Raptors that are going to go down the last week of March and the first week of April. I mean, those two games are going to mean so much to the Eastern Conference and those two teams up top that sit atop the East. Listen, these next 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks or so, I think Brad Stevens is polishing up that rotation. He's trying to get the most out of Monroe. I mean, Monroe is showing signs that he can not only, you know, come up with stops on the defensive end, but offensively, I mean, look, I may be Ian Crow here. You know, I honestly thought this is a guy who I just didn't see him, you know, quite able to fit in Brad Stevens' system. He's just not that prototypical big man that we've seen be successful in Brad Stevens' system. When they made a signing, I love the signing. You know, I love the fact because I looked at him as insurance for someone like Aaron Baines, insurance for a big guy who can essentially do the same things that Aaron Baines can do, but can offer you a bit more on the offensive end. However, he's really shutting me up the last couple of games here, specifically, of course, Saturday night against the Houston Rockets. And I think that he's going to be a guy who can give this team viable minutes in the playoffs. Still not 100% sure about matchups, how he's going to do against a team, you know, whether we're talking about the Cavs that like to run or whether we're talking about, you know, the Raptors. I'm not 100% sure, but we're going to find out within the next couple of weeks. You can see his stamina coming back into form, which is going to be huge for this team. However, what Brad Stevens is trying to do right now is trying to get the most out of the other guys. You got Daniel Tice, who's in the fold, of course. You know, he was really in quite a rhythm before he went down with that injury. You got guys off the bench, of course, you know, like these end-of-the-bench guys who have given you solid minutes throughout the entire season. You know, you're going to see Brad Stevens tweak his lineups and see what he can get out of most of these guys. Marcus Morris continues to be a guy. Tonight was a bad example, but Saturday night continues to be a guy who can produce at the end of the fourth quarter, give you some solid production offensively. You're going to need as much offense as you can get if you're Brad Stevens out of this squad, because let's face it, when the well dries for this Celtics offense, I mean, it can be detrimental towards the end of the fourth quarter when they just cannot come up with buckets. We've seen it in the past. We've seen it when it's just Kyrie Irving essentially putting up big shots, putting up 28, 29, 30 points, you know, a night. And then when it comes to turning to other guys to step up, we've seen Jason Tatum struggle. We've seen Jaylen Brown struggle. Seeing these two guys bounce back, whether it's against the Bulls or whatever team they're playing against, is obviously comforting, and especially Jaylen Brown. I mean, this guy's been heating it up since the All-Star break. You know, the All-Star break was good to Jaylen, and we're starting to see that right now, especially since the winning streak started right before the Houston Rockets matchup on Saturday night. But this is the Celtics post-game show. I am Josue Pavone. He is Matt Chin. We are taking your phone calls at 347-215-7771. Again, the phone number to contact us and join the show is 347 347- 215-7771. The phone lines are brought to you by RX Bars. If you haven't already, head over to rxbar.com/GardenReport, where you can save yourself 20% off your first purchase by entering the promo code GardenReport. All you got to do is head over to rxbar.com/GardenReport, and you can save 20% off your first purchase. Give us a call, 347-215-7771. This is the Celtics post-game show. It's the Celtics top the Bulls, 105-289, Matt. Let's just get it out there because I love asking people's opinion on this matchup between the Celtics and the Raptors. I mean, I know we're still, you know, weeks away from seeing that those two games that are 6 days within reach. There's 6 days in between those two games, a home and away back home and away set between the Celtics and the Raptors that are probably going to decide which team gets which seed heading into the playoffs. Matt, how do you feel about the Celtics team going up against the Raptors? And would it be the end of the world if the Celtics were to head into the playoffs as the second seed as opposed to the first seed?
I don't think it would be the end of the world. Look, my thing with the Raptors is they've always been a great regular season team. They've always been a good juggernaut. And I touched on this the last time I was on the post-game show, that the ultimate test for them, and I think no one should really fully buy into them until they see what happens in the playoffs. I give them a lot of credit, Dwayne Casey, for installing a completely new offense and, you know, something that's predicated on putting the ball in DeMar DeRozan's hands, letting him carve up the defense, get into the lane, distribute and facilitate from there, or hit those 15-foot Kobe-like turnaround jumpers, using Kyle Lowry more as a spot-up shooter. But, you know, they are huge games for the Celtics. They haven't had a ton of games against the Raptors, so one of them was very early in the season, and the strength of the Celtics is their perimeter defense, and obviously it begins with both Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. So if you're able to keep them at bay and keep them along the perimeter and contest shots, then you have a great shot against them. I don't think it's the end of the world for the Celtics to end up as the two seed. You know, if you're one of those fans that wants to play the game of, oh, well, we need to avoid the Cavs in the second round, then maybe you could see it as more of a concern. But I don't think of this Cavs team as being the same Cavs team that we're used to, and the absence of Kyrie Irving is apparent for them. Isaiah Thomas wasn't that. Certainly Jordan Clarkson's not going to be that. I don't think they have a second facilitator, shot creator quite like Kyrie Irving. But getting back to the Raptors, for me, it's always going to be, do they transition this new offense that they have and play the same way in the playoffs? I have questions about that because they've just been so night and day once it gets to the postseason. For the Celtics, I think rest is a priority, and that's why I brought it up in my opening take, that being able to you know, only play Al Horford for 20 minutes tonight or 22 minutes tonight when he's looked, to be honest, pretty tired and starting to show his age the last couple games. So to me, it's more important for them to be healthy and that, you know, full capacity once the playoffs start than it is for them to chase the one seed and really be playing guys in the upper 30s in minutes and trying to chase the Raptors team that's playing some of the best basketball in the NBA right now. Look, they're the only team with a top five defense and a top five offense over the course of the season. And that's an equation that can really, you know, on paper, send you far to the Eastern Conference Finals, maybe even possibly to the finals. But, you know, what do you think about these upcoming two matchups?
Well, I think if there's 1 year for the Raptors to put it together and make a deep run, I mean, it's probably this one. I mean, the Cleveland Cavaliers haven't looked this weak since LeBron James wasn't around. You know, of course, the Celtics are right there. The Wizards are – you can even put the Wizards in the mix. You know, we don't know what's going to happen when Ja Wall comes back, but they've been looking pretty damn good with Bradley Beal playing at this high of a level. When it comes to the Raptors, though, I just feel like they really rally behind that home court. If you're able to take away the home court from the Raptors, I think you put yourself in a really good spot if you're the Boston Celtics. Now, that's going to be something that needs to be decided by the end of the season. Is it the end of the world the Celtics don't get the home court advantage against a team like the Raptors and they end up seeing each other in the playoffs? No, it's not the end of the world, but you kind of put yourself in a tough spot because, you know, you look at these two guys and Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. Yes, they haven't had the best, the most level of success in the postseason, but they're two guys who have been there again and again and again. And you just have to think that at one point, at some point, it's going to click. And if this one season that we could see that, it's probably going to be this one. You know, you see these young guys who have been contributing for this team. You see guys coming off the bench. I mean, this is a deeper Toronto team that we've seen in the past. I mean, I'm not saying that these guys off the bench can essentially, go off for 25, 30 points, but they are role players who can put together solid wins, solid productions, and slow you down. We've seen them do it against the Celtics, and we've seen the Celtics do the same against other teams. But we can't forget about how young this group is. Guys who haven't been playoff tested, you know, guys who didn't really have the same kind of role that they have now that they had last year. I'm looking at Jaylen Brown. I'm looking at Terry Rozier. I mean, these are two guys whose roles have increased dramatically in comparison to who they were last year for this squad. And, you know, you take that into consideration, along with, of course, Kyrie Irving, a guy who can essentially win you a game night in and night out. I mean, this is a guy who could go off for 40, 45. I still don't think we've seen the very best of Kyrie Irving, put it that way. When you see that 45-point performance, I mean, of course, we've seen it earlier in the season, but I think he's holding back a bit. You know, Kyrie Irving knows that it's a long season and it's a long run. Kyrie Irving has been through it. Been to the NBA Finals 3 straight times. This is a guy who can preserve that energy and put forth that production in the postseason when it matters most. This is a team that I really think is going for it. I think Brad Stevens and Kyrie Irving believe the Celtics can make it to the NBA Finals. They truly believe that. And I think when you have that mindset between those two guys, I think they're planning one hell of a playoff run. And I think we're going to see a very special performance out of Kyrie Irving. Regardless if it ends up in the NBA Finals or not, I think this will be a deep playoff run. However, if they do see a team like the Toronto Raptors in the second round, that's one team I think that could slow them down, besides, of course, the Cleveland Cavaliers. This is the Celtics postgame show for CLNS Media. Give us a call to join the conversation at 347-215-7771. That's 347-215-7771, Matt. Aside from the Raptors and the Cavaliers, do you see the Wizards in the mix through all this? I mean, we know what the Wizards did last season against the Celtics team. Of course, this is a very different Celtics team in comparison to last year. They did manage to push the Celtics to 7 games. I mean, a 28-point performance out of Kelly Olynyk was the headline in that this series deciding Game 7 matchup that pushed the Celtics into the Eastern Conference Finals against the Cleveland Cavaliers. What's your take on the Washington Wizards?
Yeah, I think it's a hard time to judge both the Cavs and the Wizards because they're missing dynamic all-star players in Kevin Love and John Wall. And particularly with Washington, you need to wonder, what's their chemistry like? You had a little bit of the fallout when Wall went down and Beal started becoming the go-to guy and Satoransky became more of the distributing point guard who was not that Wall's not a pass-first point guard, but the ball tends to stop a little bit when the ball's in Wall's hands. You know, they're running up and down the floor a little bit more. So how do they adjust with, you know, who knows when Wall is going to come back, how many games they're really going to have in the bank at the end of the season to, implement him back into the offense. On paper, I've always felt that this Washington team is as talented as anyone else in the NBA or anyone else in the Eastern Conference. It's just a matter of, can they play together and can they continue to gel on the floor and can John Wall and Brad Beal figure out how to share one basketball between them and can Scott Brooks coach at the same level as Brad Stevens, as Dwayne Casey, because I think we've seen with Washington in the playoffs that, you know, they are a team that's not as good as the sum of their parts versus the Celtics, who kind of outplay that level, I think, for the last couple of years. And maybe that's a testament to Brad Stevens putting his players in the best position to win and the best position to be successful. But that's something that I've yet to see with Washington. I think they're a distant fourth behind Toronto, behind Boston, behind Cleveland. But, you know, if they get everything clicking, they're a team that you have to take seriously because on paper they have all of the pieces, especially now that Kelly Oubre has become a much more dynamic offensive player. You know, you switch him back to the bench, and you know, the confidence that Brad Beal and Otto Porter have developed the last couple weeks without John Wall, and then you bring Satoransky off the bench, who's been really, really good offensively. You know, they have a great rotation for the playoffs and a lot of playmakers. But until I see them play with a sense of togetherness, I'm not ready to buy all the way in on Washington as a top three kind of contending team.
347-215-7771 is how you join us. Again, the phone number is 347-215-7771. And the phone number is brought to you by RX Bar. If you haven't already, head over to rxbar.com/GardnerReport where you can save 20% off your first purchase. That is rxbar.com/GardnerReport. Let's jump to the phone lines here. We got a couple of guys here who want to jump in on this conversation, including CLNS Media's Ty Ray, who's been waiting for a couple of minutes here, wants to jump in on this conversation. What's going on, Ty? How are you doing tonight?
It's great to talk to you guys. I don't think I've spoken to you in quite some time, and I just wanted to touch base. I wanted to get in on the conversation in regards to who the Celtics could face in the playoffs, but before I start going there, I hope we can put the Jaylen talk to bed about him being inconsistent and disappointing. I mean, I heard that all year, especially before the All-Star break, and the man's a stud, and we're damn lucky to have him. And the same for Rozier, man. How good has Terry Rozier been this year? I think back to 3 years ago when people booing him on draft night, booing Danny. And he is going – I mean, think about what he is going to add off the bench in the playoffs. We're watching this player just blossom in front of us, and he's been playing heavy rotation minutes since the first year he was in the league, you know, in the postseason. So – he's only gotten better, and I'm just the sky's the limit for this kid, and I hope we don't get rid of him. I really worry that Danny could use him as a trade asset down the line, but that's not for today. But getting back to what you guys were talking about right before you took my call, which is the Celtics and possible playoff opponents, the Wizards guy, honestly scare the hell out of me. If you get a Brad Beal and a healthy John Wall, they scare the hell out of me. We saw what they could do last year in the playoffs to the Celtics. Now, granted, that was a different Celtics team, but the Wizards capable of going on these really long runs, especially when Beal and Wall getting hot. So that concerns me. The Raptors actually scare me. I don't think Celtics Nation is giving them enough respect. It's not that they've had their shortcomings in the playoffs in previous years, but this is a completely different year, and the Raptors bench, guys, scares the hell out of me. The team that really doesn't scare me that much, believe it or not, are the Cavaliers, even though they have the best player on the planet. So
really,
I just wanted to add, I don't know, man. I know that they blew the Celtics out in TD Garden a couple weeks ago, and I know they made their additions. I've watched them a few games since, and there's just something not there, guys. There just isn't. Then again, like I said, best player on the planet, so you know he can turn it on, but I just don't see him being able to carry that Cavaliers team very far. That's just me.
Yeah,
Kevin Love to be
the best amazing player in the NBA. I mean, that's the only thing that gets me thinking that, you know what, you know, if shots start to fall like we saw happen in that game, and granted that blowout, I mean, that was a group of guys who haven't been on a playoff contending team in their career essentially, and they all just wanted to impress LeBron James. They know, come on, at the end of the day, we all know LeBron James is the one pulling the strings here. They know if they're in Cleveland mid-season, it's because LeBron James wanted them and LeBron James believes in them. So when you saw, you know, Rodney Hood and Clarkson and guys hitting shots left and right, you know, we know that they're not going to be able to produce that type of offense every single night. However, in a seven-game series, I mean, of course, we know we can expect out of Kyrie Irving. But my only fear is, you know, you talk about Jaylen Brown, you know, some people are knocking him for not being as consistent as he should be. Jaylen Brown has been incredible this season. Jaylen Brown has been a guy who stepped into a role where he was supposed to be the lockdown defender and then had to be one of the best offensive weapons on the team, and he did both of them. He's been doing both of them throughout the regular season, so I'm always going to give him props for that. But I'm just thinking throughout the playoffs, when it comes down to a seven-game series, I mean, it's going to be a tough matchup. I don't think it's Cleveland, you know, no doubt by a landslide, but I think it's going to be tough. I hope you're right. You know, maybe it won't be as tough as I'm thinking it's going to be, but I just can't help but think of LeBron James and what he's able to do. But if you put the teams, you put the rosters side by side, I mean, it's damn near neck and neck if we're talking about the depth of these two teams when they go at it, while the Cleveland Cavaliers
are still not 100% figuring things out. But let's face it, for the most part, we can see the weapons they have and just how deep that team can go in the Eastern Conference, or at least if they want to go to the NBA Finals, we know the Celtics could easily give them a 7-game series, and that game 7 is a coin flip.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it depends to me. I'm sorry, guy. I didn't mean to cut you off. It's just how invested LeBron will be in that series.
That's a good point.
How invested will he be? Will he really? I'm not doubting his professionalism, but will he really be invested in going deep into a playoff run with this Cavaliers team, knowing he has 1 foot out the door? That's my whole thing. We saw that happen years back, right? 2010, LeBron is the first go around with the Cavs. Yeah, he just lost interest. We saw it there. So it depends on if LeBron really thinks that this Cavs team can go to the NBA Finals and beat the Rockets or the Warriors, which we know they can't. I mean, they're just not going to be able to. So anyway, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I think you hit it right on the head there, Ty. My thing with the Cavs is that their defensive issues, in my opinion, is real. It's legitimate.
Yeah.
Before the trade deadline, I mean, they're still a bottom five defensive team in the league. Before the trade deadline, it was all about effort. Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder. I mean, Jay Crowder always puts in effort, but he just wasn't gelling there. And even LeBron at times, you know, was really falling asleep on defense. After the trade deadline, you know, they're still trying on defense, but I'm not going to mistake Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance as some sort of defensive stoppers. And when you put Kevin Love back on this team, that's not going to make it any better. And now that Tristan Thompson is out for what I've seen, at least another week or two, he's their dynamic back end stopper defensively, and he's been, you know, pretty horrible, for his standards on the defensive end this season. That said, I'm not going to doubt LeBron. I've done it too many times in the past. I can see him flip a switch, but we've seen in the past that, you know, if you only have one dynamic shot maker and one dynamic shot creator, you saw with James Harden last year, you saw Russell Westbrook last year in the playoffs, that could be negated. And we are talking about the king, maybe the best player of all time when it's all said and done. But there are ways when you don't have a lot of off the dribble creators to, you know, negate some of his unbelievable play. So I think once Kevin Love comes back, they're going to need him to be really, really great. You touched upon Terry Rozier and Jaylen Brown as probably the two most improved players from last year. Obviously, there are only four players that were returning. I'm right there with you. When they booed him on draft night, I wasn't about that. In retrospect, you could have had Justice Winslow and given up Terry Rozier and three Nets picks or three first-round draft picks if that's what you really want. And now Justice Winslow is being shopped at the trade deadline by the Heat. And then with Jaylen Brown, I think Joe Sway hit it right on the head. He's had such a big jump in role from last year to this year. Last year being more of a role player, playing the three, sometimes the four, and now switching to the starting shooting guard spot to offer a little more length, hiding a lot of Kyrie Irving's defensive issues. You know, he's responsible for guarding the best wing, sometimes the best backcourt player every single game, and he's a defensive prospect at first. He's always been touted for his defensive skill set, and he's right up there with some of the best some of the players in the NBA who have increased their scoring margin by double digit amounts from last year. He's up there in the top five. I haven't checked on it lately, but he's been there the whole season. So, it's to be expected. He's 21 years old. He's in his second season. I think with the Celtics, everyone wants to put them on fast forward so quickly because they're 45-20, 46-20, whatever it is. But they're still one of the youngest teams in the NBA. So patience is a virtue with this team. And sometimes you just need to step back a little bit and realize that, you know, maybe everything that we get for the rest of the season is gravy.
Ty, would you agree with me that we haven't seen the best of Kyrie Irving yet? I don't know. I agree.
His minutes are down this season compared to last season. Once he gets in the playoffs, he's playing, you know, high 30s, sometimes in the 40s. We're going to see him be a lot more aggressive.
And he's going to push in the fourth gear, man.
I agree. I was actually disappointed with the way he played down the stretch the other night in Houston, but that's me being nitpicky. I agree with you. I don't think we've seen the best of him. All I do is I go back. Do you guys remember the game he had? It was a game 4 last year. Game Yeah, it was game four.
Yeah, game four.
The Celtics.
Yes.
Oh my God. When the Celtics could have won that game. Yeah. Well, I'm like, oh my God, the Celtics are up by double digits. We're going to go back. You know, it's going to be tied at two games apiece. Going back to the guard. The next thing you know, Kyrie Irving. I mean, it was insane. And we have yet to see a game like that, I think, from him this year. Don't trust me. I mean, he's had, you know, 30-point efforts, but nothing like where he just remember taking over that game, that third quarter. I mean, that Celtic lead just vanished as Kyrie couldn't, you know, miss a single shot. We get to see him play on that level. But I agree with you, Josue. I agree with you totally. But I just wanted to throw out just the Rozier and Jalen Love, because they're two players that I just think that for a long time went unappreciated, especially Jalen. And he played so long this year in the shadow, I thought, of Jason Tatum, who was so sensational to start the year. And he's still playing well. And I thought we set the bar way too high for a 19-year-old kid. But I just got tired of hearing, well, we'll trade Jason, or Jalen rather, for Anthony Davis or whoever. And I'm like, are you guys high? I mean, seriously, he is the most versatile player we have on the freaking team. He can do anything. And I remember when he came out of college, the knock was the kid couldn't shoot. Now look at him. I think, guys, honestly, do you think he's a 2010 guy here pretty soon in the next couple of years?
I mean, if you look at his projections, his second year is better than Paul George. It's better than Jimmy Butler offensively. I mean, it's better than Kawhi Leonard his second year of his career. I think he's not even close to his ceiling yet. And that's why I think Celtics fans sometimes have kind of this jaded perception that, you know, even just because we're near the top of the Eastern Conference the last 2 years, that, oh, that means we should definitely be competing for a championship right away. It's still a slow build. And
yeah,
you need to be able to take a step back and realize that there's meaningful growth each year. And they're going to beat their projection, their over-under from before the season, and that was with Gordon Hayward on the roster. So I think you have to be satisfied with what you've seen. And Jalen's his ceiling and it is going to just keep skyrocketing up and up.
I think it's a strong possibility that we'll see that. Well, but I think what makes it tough is Gordon Hayward. I mean, when Gordon Hayward comes back, you're going to see a lot of those looks, a lot of those shots go down. You know, you put Gordon Hayward in the mix here, and it's not like you're just adding you know, an 18, 19 point score, 20 point score, which is what he was before he went down. And you're just adding that to the point totals behind, you know, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. I mean, you put Gordon Hayward in the mix, we're talking at least, you know, 15, 16 shots, or maybe less, somewhere in between that window. Maybe we're talking about 14 to 16 shots going to Gordon Hayward, you know. So, of course, that's going to bump their attempts down, their shot attempts. We're talking about Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. But as a team, that's one heck of a squad, man. I mean, I can't say enough about what this team is going to look like when they're at full strength.
It's insane.
You know, keep forgetting how good Gordon Hayward is going to fit with this club. And you can have someone like Jason on the bench. You know, you have still have Jaylen Brown in the mix. I mean, there's just so many different possibilities that Brad Stevens can do. And the best part about it, everyone is on the books. I mean, they do have to re-up Kyrie Irving within the next year or so. But for the most part, you got a three-year window with these guys, including Al Horford, who you don't necessarily have to worry about re-upping that core. And that is a very dynamic and strong core to build with to challenge any single team in the NBA. I mean, I can't say enough. We all agree, I'm sure. Celtics are in a very, very great shape, great position. And they have, even with the team they have right now, which is not at full strength, of course, you know, whatsoever, and a 19-year-old and a 21-year-old in their starting five, yet they still have a strong chance of making it to the NBA Finals.
That's crazy. And I think back to 4 years ago before they traded for Isaiah, and I think back to that team that Brad had to inherit. Jared Bayless and Jordan Crawford starting at guard, and Jared Sullinger and Kelly in his rookie year, and Chris Humphreys. And to think where we are now, in that short a period of time, is nothing short of miraculous. That's why I wish sometimes, hey guys, just relax. Danny knows what he's doing. We're getting there, and we're way ahead of schedule. I mean, way ahead of schedule. We're very spoiled as Celtic fans, and we forget that sometimes.
Matt, jump in here.
I mean, it's true. Like, it's true. I think people's expectations tend to get a little bit blurred when they see that, you know, this team's all of a sudden a 50-win team. They're close to a 60-win team. But as long as you're seeing meaningful growth year to year, especially with a team that had so much turnover from last year, they're the number one defense after being, what, number 12 or whatever it was last year. Then they get rid of Avery Bradley, who everyone is talks about, as every NBA player on Twitter is talking about how he should be first team all defense every single year. And they get rid of the best role player, quote unquote, 3-and-D role player, and Jay Crowder. And, you know, everyone thinks that, oh, well, maybe they're only going to win in the high 40s because they need to have a growth year and take a step back. But everything that you see with Brad Stevens is kind of the focal point of someone who maximizes all of the talent on the team is exactly what you want to see. And it'll be interesting to see what happens with LeBron this summer. Ideally for Celtics fans, he heads west. And it'll be interesting to see how Philadelphia grows in the next coming years, because I think they're really the team that you should be most focused on in terms of who your biggest challenge is. Look, this Toronto team, they're great, but Kyle Lowry is, what, 32 years old now?
Right.
And DeMar DeRozan is going to be 30 next year, close to next year. So, look, as long as you get out of the first round this year and you don't get totally embarrassed in the second round, I think – you need to consider this season a win, considering where they were after the first night of the season, kind of the bleak overview that people had after that. And you saw it from every single national pundit. Oh, the Celtics are done. Their season's over. And that happens year after year after year with superstars that go down with debilitating injuries. That can really take something out of a team. But for this team that, in my eyes, acts a lot like a college team. They bought into Brad Stevens' system. They buy into each other's strengths. You know, they support each other. You can see it on the floor. You know, it's beautiful to see. And, you know, is it realistic for them to win an NBA championship this year? Probably not, unless you see a big, huge injury from Golden State or Houston or whoever you meet there. But they, like you said, Ty, they're right ahead of schedule. And anyone who thinks otherwise is just nitpicking.
Yeah, it's silly when people make statements that they should be further ahead than they are. It's amazing where they're at. Before I let you guys go, though, you had mentioned Jay Crowder. It's nice to see him playing well in Utah. I'm a big
Definitely.
Fan of Jay's. And I hate and I'll leave it at this. I just hate people crapping on the old Celtics teams, because they were the bridge team, right? I mean, they kept us interested, and they attracted the talent we have now. So it's great to see Jay playing well, and I hope him, nothing but the best for him. And let's hope IT gets his career turned around too, and I wish him nothing but the best.
I mean, we talk about those three guys, you know, Avery Bradley, IT, Crowder. I mean, without those guys, essentially, you don't see the Al Horford signing. You know, you don't see
Gordon Hayward.
That bridging the gap years, I like to call it, especially we don't see that special Eastern Conference run that we saw last season.
And I think Quinn Snyder is Brad Stevens West. I think Quinn Snyder
is
a fabulous coach.
Great coach.
And with Crowder, he's someone that if you utilize him the right way, he can be magic for you. And as great as the Cavs are, I don't consider Ty Lue to be one of the best premier coaches in the NBA.
No.
And I think he was just misused and kind of, you know, flummoxed by the amount of drama that's been on that team and being forced to, you know, either take LeBron's side of the old squad or the new team with IT. And it was just not a good match, but it's a good point to see him playing well for this Jazz team, who have missed Rudy Gobert for most of the season, but they're not far.
No Gordon
Hayward. They're only two games back of a playoff spot in an uber competitive Western Conference. So kudos
to
Jay
Crowder.
Let's
think about that, guys. I mean, We don't talk about the Utah Jazz very often on the postgame show. Probably never. But to say that that Quinn Snyder
only when we were
is
salivating
West,
against for Gordon Hayward. But
there you go. But to think of what Utah has been able to do in the absence of Gobert and Gordon Hayward is nothing but miraculous that they've been that competitive. And before I let you go, and that's the second time I've said that. The Warriors scare me a lot more in the finals than the Rockets do, guys. I'd really like our matchup against the Rockets. I really do. I think that's – I don't want to call it –
wouldn't that be one heck of a final?
Yeah.
Oh,
it'd be awesome.
Be so damn fun. The Celtics should have won the game the other night. They just got sloppy down the stretch.
Yeah.
Definitely. Hey, Ty, we appreciate you, man. Call back again.
Yeah, take care, guys. Bye-bye.
347-215-7771. Absolutely, that was a great call. Again, the number is 347-215-7771, and the phone number is brought to you by RX Bar. Head over to rxbar.com/Garden Report where you can get 25% off your first purchase. That's right. I'm giving you an extra 5% because I can say that. That's why I got the power to – no, I'm just kidding. I messed that up, Matt. I was supposed to say 25%, man. You're supposed to tell me, man.
Oh,
I thought it was 20%.
All right.
All right, let's get back to the phone lines. We got Lou from New Jersey.
Lou,
sweet
Lou,
for quite a bit. What's up, Lou?
Okay, well, what would scare you more, facing if you get to the finals, the Warriors in the finals, or how about in the Eastern Conference? Does Toronto strike you though? Because you know they're in the leading the conference right now. So how do you feel about matching up against them in the Eastern Conference Finals?
I'm taking the Warriors. That's a tough one.
Yeah, the Warriors scare me more. They're maybe the best team of all time. I said it.
last year's
version. They're not as deep this year, but I mean the Warriors. I think they could beat anyone. If you're playing by today's rules, you play
right.
In the '80s. I'll take the '86 Celtics over anyone. But yeah, I mean the Raptors team, and Ty touched on this a little bit. You can't overlook the fact that they've made meaningful changes to their system. And to get DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry and Serge Ibaka to buy into that this year is huge. And for them to put aside the way they've typically played when they've been all NBA caliber players, I think they're going to try to do it in the playoffs and transition that same level of play. And if it's successful, the way they move the ball, they can just rain threes on you in huge bunches, that team. And, you know, they had a ton of turnover from their bench last year. Like, I can't imagine what they would look like if they could still have PJ Tucker, if they could have Corey Joseph on their team. And they're a little bit younger off the bench, but they've best bench in the NBA scoring wise. And like I said at the top of the broadcast, top five offense, top five defense. You can't mess with that. Those statistics don't lie. And my question with them is, in a tight game, do they go back to their ISO hero ball stuff that they did, you know, the last couple of years?
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, Boston looked like they were going to run away with the Eastern Conference just until a few weeks ago, and now it's a tight race between Toronto and Boston. So, you know, I've been keeping my eye on that for quite some time. I mean, Toronto's nothing to mess with.
Yeah, they're two teams that are neck and neck, you know. Again, if this is the one year for them to put things together and break out of the East, or at least head to the Eastern Conference Finals, I think it would be this year. So I am considering them a threat along with the Cleveland Cavaliers. But, I mean, when we're talking about a team like the Golden State Warriors and the NBA Finals, I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find someone that can predict or, you know, with confidence predict the Celtics to win the NBA Finals. You'd be hard pressed to find someone like that. I mean, I think the narrative throughout most wishful Celtics fans this season is an NBA Finals berth. And the reason why it stops there is essentially because they see the Golden State Warriors in the Celtics' way.
Well, when Haber went down at the beginning of the season, what did you think your chances were?
I thought they were going to be like a 4 or 5 seed.
Really?
Without Hayward. I thought they were maybe 4-4 Hayward.
Sorry.
I didn't think they would be where they are now, if that's what you mean.
Yeah, because when I saw an injury and when we went down, like, oh boy, this is gonna be a bad season. I was thinking, I didn't think it was gonna be a good season for the Celtics with that. You had one of your key players down, like, this can't be good.
Yeah.
When I heard you say that, I thought you meant before Hayward went down. So I was mixed up. You know, after you
went down the first game of the season,
I saw them as about like a 4 seed, 3 maybe. Because I mean, essentially, the Eastern Conference is pretty weak. I mean, let's face it. Aside from Raptors, Cavs, Wizards, I still put in the mix there. I mean, it's top heavy. You know, so that's where I had them when Hayward went down.
The only silver lining I saw with Hayward going down is that you could really incorporate some new facets with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and that expectations kind of simmer down a little bit, and you could, you know, really harken back to their development and prioritize that some more. But now that they're second place in the East, you can have your cake and eat it too, because all that development has happened, and we talked extensively about Jaylen Brown's growth. Obviously, Jason Tatum, if it weren't for Ben Simmons having a fake redshirt rookie year, he might be rookie of the year this year. You know, those guys, they're going to be better for it next year. And I think at the beginning of next year, when you get the real Gordon Hayward back and he comes back into his all NBA caliber mode, you're just going to have so many weapons, and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown will have been better developed because of the Gordon Hayward injury.
Yeah, because, you know, because I was thinking, you know, how good, when you have a player like that go down, how good could it be? But then again, time for the new guys to step up and see what develops from that, and it looks like they've proven that.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And, 100%.
And I wasn't surprised that their offense took a hit probably in the February time. You expected them to hit a little bit of a wall. Jason Tatum playing huge minutes for a rookie, just carrying a massive workload and, you know, being that relied upon to score 15 plus points per night. You know, that's, you're, when you're a rookie and the most games you ever played in a basketball season is 20, 30 in college at the most, you know, you're playing an 82 game slate, you're going to go through ebbs and flows like that. And hopefully now that their offense, that they've been second in offense since the All-Star break, hopefully they've turned a corner with that. And you see a healthy Marcus Morris now, Terry Rozier, Marcus Smart playing a lot more confidently. I think they're, and then obviously Greg Monroe adds a new aspect that you didn't have before. I think their offense has turned a corner, and, you know, maybe you can sustain a top 10 offense for the rest of the season. And then you pair that with your lockdown switchable defense, and you have, you know, the potion for a championship caliber team.
Hey, Lou, we're up against it, man. We appreciate you calling.
Or, do you, or can we rule that out?
What's that?
Do you see the Cavaliers as a threat thing, or can we rule them out now?
They're always a threat.
Yeah.
Until LeBron proves otherwise, they're always a threat.
Especially when you no longer have Derrick Rose and all those guys coming off the bench like you did earlier. Dwayne Wade.
So, in other words, don't be fooled by what you see right now.
No, they're still working on it. And once they get Kevin Love back, they'll be a different team. They have more two-way players now. They have more two-way players now, which is what you need in the playoffs.
Yeah, Love is due back, what, in 2 weeks?
Probably the last couple of weeks of the season. So maybe 3 weeks? Yeah.
Three? Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, and by that time, there'll be about, 10 games left in the season, I think?
Yeah, just in time for the playoff push, pretty much.
Yeah. Well, it should be interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen crazy things, but, it will be interesting. All right? That's a team to definitely look out for. Hey, Lou, I appreciate you calling, man. Call back again, all right?
I wrap things
up. Thanks,
Lou. If time allows me, I will.
Hey, that was a great call. Come on now.
Yeah, for sure.
Hey, Matt, this is a great time.
Yeah, man.
This is what, biggest show we've been
I always love doing the post game. And look, on a blowout, we can still figure out stuff to talk about. And one thing that I didn't talk about with the Bulls that I wanted to touch on, Brad Stevens got the monkey off his back. Bobby Portis, a minus 33, 7 points tonight only. He has been Stevens' kryptonite. He's been Brad Stevens' kryptonite for years. And that guy, it's so good to see him at team low, minus 33.
That's so funny. I completely forgot about that. Yeah, and it's so funny because he's the one coach who always gives him props to. It's like, you know, they got guys like Bobby Portis, you know, because he knows the track record. I mean, Brad Stevens never forgets when guys, like, have his number. That's so funny you mentioned that. I completely forgot.
Yeah. Josue, let me ask you, because we talked about this last time on the post game. Who do you want to see first round of the playoffs? It's looking like the Pistons are not going to be able to – they're, what, 5.5 games back now? So chances are you got the Sixers, the Heat, and the Bucks. Who's your ideal first-round matchup?
I mean, out of all those teams, I guess I would like to see the Sixers. I just don't see any of those teams as a legitimate threat, honestly. I mean, Milwaukee Bucks, if they are in that spot, I think they're the toughest
they're the toughest team out of those guys, just because you know what their size, what they're able to do. Of course, Giannis, you know, and it's sort of a mismatch throughout the lineup. But we've seen the Celtics take care of those guys. You know, we've seen them take care of the 76ers. They're rolling as well right now, but at the same time, I just don't think their recent success equates to what we will see in a first round matchup. I think a first round matchup is just everyone is just eager, ready to go. The game slows down a bit, you know, and teams are just able to really dissect each other. We know what Brad Stevens can do in a 7-game series, really studying film, and he can compete, you know. And I think whether we're talking about any three of those teams, I don't think the Celtics necessarily have trouble with any of them. If I had to pick one, I'd say the scariest one for the Celtics is the Milwaukee Bucks. What about you?
Yeah, I agree with you with the Bucks. I think Giannis is just so incredible that he's kind of the caliber of player that can just win you a series. And there's nothing that you can do about it. If Giannis catches fire and he just becomes unstoppable in the open court, I mean, they almost stole it from the Raptors in the first round last year. And that was without Eric Bledsoe, and that was without Jabari Parker. So now that they have those two guys in the fold, that's a team that I don't want to see. I actually want the Heat, and it's close between the Heat and the Sixers for me, because I buy everything you're saying. The Sixers, they're young, they're inexperienced, they've never been there before. Can you force Ben Simmons to shoot from the outside? I mean, he hasn't been forced to do that the whole season, but are they a little bit gimmicky because they don't have the go-to player, like when your offense goes out the door, who can just get you a bucket? I don't
see
them.
They almost remind me of like the Celtics 2 years
Simmons.
Ago in a way.
Like they'll get there, and I do think the Ilyasova ad is going to help in Bellinelli, but I want to play the Heat simply because I think the Heat are a team that's just solely built on grit and tenacity and energy. And they're just like the regular season team that you see them on the schedule and you know they're going to grind it out for 48 minutes every single game. But
and you don't know who's going to go off. You know, right, either Johnson,
right,
Tyler,
yeah,
James,
right,
you know, but so many different guys.
But in the playoffs, teams like that, I mean, I think a lot of that stuff gets negated. As much as I like Eric Spoelstra as a coach, I like their system, I like the Heat culture, whatever it is, hashtag Heat culture. You know, every team plays hard in the playoffs. Every team grinds it out. You know, you don't need a deep bench like they do. You don't need to run 10 deep. You need people who can get buckets, because by game 6, game 7, your offensive schemes, they get negated. They go out the door. They're, you know, teams know what you're doing. They know what to expect. And for me, without Dion Waiters there, you know, I don't see that, you know, ice in the veins shot maker who can just create something out of a nothing possession. I mean, as much as I like Hassan Whiteside, Goran Dragic, I think they're more secondary, tertiary players on a really, really good playoff team. So that's why I want the Heat. I think between the Heat and the Sixers, it's close for me.
All right. Yeah, we'll see what happens, Matt. You know, in the meantime, we still got about, what, a month? 4 weeks?
Yeah.
4.5 weeks left of basketball.
Yeah.
For the Celtics, as they bounce back from the Houston Rockets loss from Saturday with a 105-89 win against the Chicago Bulls. That's once again the Celtics defeat the Chicago Bulls 105-89 as they bounce back from their loss against the Rockets and get back to their winning ways. They'll take the road back to over to Minneapolis to take on the Timberwolves before coming home. They'll wrap up the 3-game road trip. No word if Kyrie Irving will be in action. They're sort of waiting to see what's going on with that, with the soreness that he dealt with that kept him out of today's game. You know, of course, the Celtics proved that they didn't need him against the Chicago Bulls, but this is a different team they'll be facing in Minneapolis, waiting for them. They'll see how that left knee responds within the next couple of days and see if he'll be back in action. But that's going to do it for us, for the CLNS Media Celtics post game show. I am Joseph Pavone. He is Matt Chen. This edition of the Celtics Post Game Show is brought to you by the good friends over at SeatGeek. Head over to SeatGeek and enter the promo code Garden Report, where you can save $20 off your first purchase of any sporting event, concert tickets. SeatGeek has you covered. The best place to go for the best deal around is SeatGeek. Head over to SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code Garden Report. You can save yourself $20 off your first purchase. Hey, Matt, we'll do this again soon, man. We'll see how the Celtics respond Thursday night, and when they come back home Sunday, and of course, we'll see how everything unfolds. Until next time, Matt. Hey, man, this was fun again.
Yeah, let's do it again soon. I think we got another one scheduled in a couple weeks, so we'll get back on the air and talk it up.
Perfect. Yes, we'll follow up on what we were talking about tonight. Sounds good, Matt. All right, he is Matt Chin. I am Josue Pavone. This has been the Celtics Post Game Show for CLNS Media. Thank you for tuning in, guys. Good night.
This has been the Celtics Post Game Show on CLNSRadio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNS Radio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcasts on the web.